Hello, I'm Richard Penson, and on behalf of CME Outfitters, I'd like to welcome you and thank you for joining us for today's podcast entitled Immunotherapy Approaches in Frontline Advanced and Recurrent Endometrial Cancer. Today's program is supported by a joint educational grant from AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals and Merck Sharp & Dohme Corporation, a subsidiary of Merck & Company Incorporated. I'm Richard Penson, a physician at Mass General Brigham and associate professor at Harvard Medical School. I'm also one of the IRB chairs at the Dana-Farber Harvard Cancer Center in Boston. And I'd like to welcome my friend and colleague, Mansoor Raza Mirza. He is a chief oncologist in the Department of Oncology, Rigshospitalet, Copenhagen University Hospital in Denmark. He's the medical director of the Nordic Society of Gynecologic Oncology Clinical Trials Unit. He's also vice president of the European Society of Gynecological Oncology. Welcome, Mansoor.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's a pleasure that we can talk to each other again.
Exciting times. So before we begin, I'd like to repeat our learning objective, which is to develop treatment plans that incorporate immune checkpoint inhibitor strategies for newly diagnosed advanced and recurrent endometrial cancer. So there's been some fabulous data presented at SGO in the New England Journal of Medicine, ASCO, ESMO, IGCS this year. This has been, Mansoor, the year that immunotherapy arrived in endometrial cancer. So tell us a little bit about that recent and emerging data.
Thanks, Richard. I think that's why I call it Cinderella disease, that it has completely changed. The immune therapy has completely changed the outcome of our patients, a disease which was, I would say from my side, from medical oncology side, was almost neglected. We have not had so much improvement. What we have seen is first immune checkpoint inhibitors being tested in second line, with Garnet study, with the pembrolizumab approval, and then the combination of pembrolizumab lenvatinib. But everybody was very clear in their mind that we have to move immune checkpoint inhibitors up front where it belongs to. And we have a tsunami of trials which started and which have concluded, and we are waiting for results. We already have results of four trials. The first two trials, as you mentioned, were published in New England Journal the same day as they were presented in SGO this year. And these were the ANGOT-EN6 RUBY trial and the GY018 trials. And these two trials, although have very similar results, they are not completely comparable according to their statistical design, the population, and so on. So these are, I would say, complementary to each other to add, and has shown unprecedented benefit. If you want, I can just go on and—
Yeah, just summarize them, that'd be great.
Yeah, so if you take the RUBY trial, RUBY trial was in stage 3, 4, and first relapse patients. And we recruited patients also with the rare tumors like carcinosarcomas. Another thing we discussed when we were planning the trial, if patients have received adjuvant chemotherapy in first or second stage high-risk groups, how long should be the treatment-free interval to enter in the trial? And we agreed on 6 months. That is another important difference. And then the primary endpoints, what we discussed, were obviously clear when we discussed that we want to see the DMMR, PFS and PFS in intention to treat, but we wanted also to see the overall survival data. When we look at the GY018 trial, I think GY018's trial has much more strength in when it comes to equally look at the DMMR population and PMMR population, because they have separate statistical design for both. But it is only PFS. OS is not the primary endpoint. Otherwise, there are minor differences. Carcinosarcomas are not added. And the patients who had received adjuvant therapy, they had to wait for 12 months to progress to enter the trial. Otherwise, again, the design is more or less similar, although again, a bit different. Both trials, you treat with carboplatin paclitaxel as backbone, and then you add concomitant to that, dostarlimab or placebo in RUBY or pembrolizumab placebo in GY018, and you continue after 6 cycles of chemotherapy with monotherapy in RUBY trial for 3 years, in GY018 for 2 years. So again, the duration is not clear how much duration we should have, because you will see the next two trials which we presented, the duration is until progression of disease. So now we have three options available.
What's your sense, particularly given those really impressive progression-free survival curves, that if you have deficient mismatch repair tumors, microsatellite unstable high tumors, it looked like you only needed a year of immunotherapy. So in hindsight, do you have a sense about how you would have designed the study differently, knowing what we know
this
now?
This is a great, great, great point. When we design the study, there are some things we don't, we cannot foresee what the outcome is going to be. That's one thing. Second thing, we at that time did not foresee that we had to do the TCG classification and maybe stratify more, not just by DMMR and PMMR, but within PMMR also according to P53. And then you will see the Duo E coming in, HRD, Ruby Part 2. So all these things, we become clever while we are doing the trials. But when we start the trial, we don't really know where to draw the line. And when it comes to the results, especially for, as you said, for the DMMR, the mismatch repair deficient, you would see in both trials, you see there are events occurring in the first year. And after that, the both trials show almost flat curves, completely flat curves. As
so
we have cured these patients.
Yeah, you have.
And they're about, 60%, 61, 62%, and they're all flat.
Yeah.
So my obvious question, as you said, would be, do we need treatment for over 1 year? I think this is asking two questions. These are the most sensitive patients. Who are the patients in that most sensitive group who are not responding, who are progressing within 1 year? That's one thing. And second thing, do we need to continue treatment over a year? That's the next question we have to answer.
We have to ask. So do I take it that your approach is just super scientific? You generate hypothesis, you answer it with the next trial. I often think about clinical care that I wear two hats. One hat, I'm encouraging the patients to go into trial. But with the other hat, I'm trying to get the best treatment for the patient sitting in front of me. So can I press you to what you say to patients off protocol or not eligible for a trial?
I would not do that. I think we need some data. We need some clinical evidence before. This is a hypothesis, and we have to prove that. I don't think in clinical practice I would do that. I'm having difficulties to convince the patients to stop treatment at 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Yeah. They don't want to stop.
So to paraphrase what you're saying, you use the evidence base and you would practice in line with how the trials that define a new standard of care were designed.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
we have hypotheses which we have to prove in future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that, because that's not sort of how I practice. I'm a little bit more fluid, but it's a safe place to be. And this year, maybe better than any other year in endometrial cancer, has advanced things for patients, given us really great data, and particularly in the subsets of these patient groups, defined a new set of questions that we can only answer in clinical trials. So congratulations, Rinji. The teams have done an awesome job with this. Yeah.
I would add to that, in the real world, I can give you example from this week. I have a patient, she was on cycle 2 of chemotherapy plus dostarlimab, and she had severe allergic reaction to paclitaxel. In early days, we will try everything to keep that patient on paclitaxel. But I sat down with her, I said, look, I don't know how much paclitaxel you need when we are giving dostarlimab and you are DMMR. I would suggest that we just continue, drop the paclitaxel with carboplatin and dostarlimab. That's another way to think about it. We don't have data on these trials which are coming in maybe next year or year to come, the EN15 and the Dominica trial. which are comparing head-to-head chemotherapy versus single-agent immune checkpoint inhibitor. So I think the field is moving so fast. You can even wake up every month and you find a new standard of care.
Yeah, that's exciting. So really impressive hazard ratios, the deficient mismatch repair, hazard ratio of 0.3, like across the board, like you said, very similar outcomes for patients. And then for Ruby, an overall survival with a hazard ratio of 0.64, just fantastic for all comers. So they're making a difference. Your ESMO presentation with the subgroups, I think for me, that was one of the sort of academic highlights of this year. Take us through that.
So that was one of the major highest priority subgroup analysis we wanted to do in our trial to do the TCGA classification. So we collected all the tissue, but we were able to do analysis on 400 out of 494 with whole exome sequencing. And what we did was first we looked at the poly. Not surprisingly, there were only 5 patients out of 400 which were poly. This tells that polys are stage 1. They never progress to stage 2 or stage 3 or 4 or relapse. So we had only 5 patients and they never progressed either. And then we looked at the DMMR and MMR proficient. And in DMMR, we had about 23% of the patients. The rest of the patients, about 75% of the population, was non-DMMR, non-poly. And there then we performed the P53 analysis and divided them into P53 mute. This is typically serous carcinomas, carcinosarcomas, grade 3 endometrioid, and P53 wild type, which is typically, you know, grade 1 and 2 endometrioid, estrogen receptor positive, all those tumors are there. So when we looked separately at the efficacy of addition of dostarlimab in these, it was obvious that DMMR did the same as it was in the publication, extreme efficacy. Poly were never progressing. All patients are alive and without progression. But when we came to the proficient patients and looked at the separation in the P53 mute, which is the worst prognosis, the high-risk population, we saw amazing increase in the Kaplan-Meier curves, both in the PFS and in OS. And I would say, if you just look at the hazard ratio, it is almost similar to what you see in DMMR, although the curves are still falling down, they're not flattened, but it is amazingly separated to each other. I must say that these analyses are non-analytical because these are, we didn't have power for them. So you can only hypothesize with that.
Yeah.
If you see the same in GY018, in GOE, and so on, then we can change our practice according to that.
Yeah.
So these are the findings which were quite surprising. Also, we saw some moderate, modest effect in the P53 wild type population, but the effect was much, much less than the P53 mute population.
Yeah. But a 50% improvement in the PFS from 20 to 30% who had not progressed. So not as good a group, but a really impressive sort of change. So are you involved in the Rainbow study?
No, I'm not.
No. So
the
Rainbow.
I'm not involved, Nordic Society, because we do not believe that all patients should receive radiation therapy.
Yeah.
We only give radiation therapy to those who have relapsed, and that's about 10 to 15%. And in Rainbow, all arms have radiation therapy.
Yeah, chemo radiation therapy. Yeah. But in terms of those, the high risk adjuvant strategies, I really like the sort of 2 years of MEGACE. It sort of is making us re-examine things. And so
re-examine their trial.
Oh, yeah, right. But imagine you have an estrogen receptor positive endometrial cancer, node positive. I just had this exact patient in clinic a little while ago. And like you say, you know, it's a node positive endometrial cancer. You really want like hormonal therapy or immunotherapy to change their outcome, and you're giving them chemo radiation therapy. It feels a little Neanderthal. Tell me about the conversation you have with that sort of patient.
So I would go further. If I would say that if it is a stage three, four disease and our first relapse patient who is grade one and two, estrogen receptor positive endometrioid histology, there are very exciting data we saw from a subgroup analysis of SIENDO trial on the selinexor, and that showed a huge benefit in this population, and that's why first line trial, the confirmatory trial is ongoing only in the P53 wild type population. That is the group we are talking about. So, talking about the prediction in future, I believe that that part of endometrial cancer patients will be probably taken. This bite will be out to this particular drug, which has shown, if it shows the same huge benefit with the hazard ratios of 0.34, probably this will be the treatment we are going to give. Until now, well, I will not start with these patients with hormonal therapy. I will give them chemotherapy plus dostarlimab. Why? Because you saw the press release lately that overall survival is also
Better.
positive in this population. So until we have something better than what we have to use the best option we have. And the best option right now is chemotherapy plus immune therapy.
Some of these sort of lines of investigation are just fascinating. Jim Kuzak at the MGH was involved in the selinexor studies. The first signal was sensitizing radiation therapy. One of my kids worked in his lab on that project. And so it's really nice. Exactly like PARP inhibitors in Newcastle, that was the original
That was the
observation.
same.
And then you see how the science grows, and we see the sort of opportunity to really demonstrate an advantage of some of these new strategies. And it's a completely different setting and a big impact for patients. So NRG-018, the methylation, no methylation, the hypermethylation status of the tumor, that data has come out. And it's very interesting, the differences between, and it's always a challenging contrast, colorectal cancer and endometrial cancer. Do you mind just unpacking that, those
So
observations
I
from?
really, really appreciate that Ramesh decided to go into this question first, because that was a very big question hanging on pembrolizumab, and but from a very small retrospective analysis of a cohort, and he showed that there is no difference in efficacy. I mean, there's a very small difference which is not statistically or clinically meaningful. So what can we say is that the drug is effective in all patients if it is methylation or is it mutation. So you can give it to all patients. I think that was very clinically meaningful analysis done in the GY018, and I really congratulate Ramesh to go quickly and do this analysis and show it to us. I'm sure that next analysis they are going to do is they will do the TCGA classification. And we all have to do the TCGA, we have to do the HRD, HER2, all these. We have to see these bricks and where to how the patients are doing, because we have so many new drugs coming in. They will take bite of each of these small subgroups of the patients, and patients will benefit from that. So our duty is in these big trials, go ahead and do more and more digging into all these sub-classifications, molecular classification, to see who is benefiting, who is not.
The most,
And
yeah. Good job. So
I mean,
the
TCGA is just one start.
right.
We have to do the PD-L1s, we have to do the HRD, we have to do the
Yeah.
TMB, and all these things we need to do. Depends how much tissue we have, but we will keep on working on that.
Yeah. And now with DuoE, PD-L1 actually does look to be like a eloquent biomarker. I was impressed with when you put the curves together, the Methylation separation of the curves in GY018 was quite good, but it was bigger with the no methylation with the germline mutated tumors. And so I wasn't that surprised that Dobrynin's data on the neoadjuvant checkpoint blockade was a little bit disappointing in contrast to like 18 CRs with
But there were only
pembrolizumab.
two cycles, right?
Yeah, it's like, do you think that was just a like not enough time?
It was, I think it was just to touch the try to, see if there is something here that we should do a bigger trial with a better plant. So it was just to proof of concept. And I think they made the proof of concept. They showed that there were responses, and the next step should be do a proper trial like colorectal.
Right.
In the dMMR population.
Okay. Yeah.
I
So
think
this.
I believe this is just the start.
So you would say 38% objective response rate is encouraging preliminary data.
With only two cycles,
Yeah. Right. We
it's
found we're doing a neoadjuvant PARP inhibitor study in upfront ovary, and it's definitely stressful. That tension between moving away from the old strategies,
yeah.
embracing new strategies. It's exploring is more stressful than the excitement we have in dissecting all of the data.
Richard,
So.
I'm looking forward to see if we can move all these new treatments up front, and the conventional therapy has to wait their term. Like even I'm bold to say now, even after looking at the colorectal data, even surgery may have to wait. Radiation therapy may not need it at
Right.
all.
I
So
think
all
in
those things we would know within years to come.
yeah, so both in cervical cancer and in endometrial cancer, it looks like you need some tumor there to be the substrate for generating the best sort of immune response. So it may really change. I agree with you. Tell us something about those other two trials. Sounds like there were other things this year in the immune checkpoint inhibitors that were you were excited about.
So now we have four phase three trial results, right? The first phase three, in ESMO, we saw Nicoletta presenting the ATTEND trial and Shannon presenting the DUO-E trial. Nicoletta's the difference from the first two trials is first two trials used PD-1s, and here you have PD-L1s, right? In the Nicoletta, she used atezolizumab. Trial statistical design was more or less the same as we had, and also overall survival is one of the endpoint. One of the very peculiar thing in Nicoletta's trial is that 30% of the population is Asian from Japan and from Korea. And I hope that soon Nicoletta would be able to show us the differences in efficacy between the Japanese, the Asian population and the European population, because it seems like that the Asian population is not benefiting that much of immune checkpoint inhibitors. And that could be one of the reasons why in the pMMR population, they did not see any benefit of addition of atezolizumab. You saw a quite nice benefit in the dMMR, but not in the pMMR population. So again, we have to learn from that more and more. It's a quite a big trial, and they have enough power to look at all these subgroups. But then the most exciting for me was the DUO-E trial, because this is the first time we are seeing in a phase three setting a PARP inhibitor being added. There are interpretation issues with that trial, because trial was powered to show the difference of addition of durvalumab to chemotherapy against chemotherapy, or addition of durvalumab and olaparib to chemotherapy versus chemotherapy alone. But it was not powered to show the difference between two experimental arms. So that is difficult, and we have to draw some conclusions. That's one thing. At that time, and I would also apologize in advance when I will present the Ruby part two data, that we did not think about that why we should give the PARP inhibitors to MMR efficient population. Probably it's not the right population. We should have done it
Right.
in a different way. The design, if I would design today, I would do it different. And you can see that there was no benefit addition of olaparib in the dMMR population. While dMMR population, you see difference. Again, everybody's asking, okay, in that population, which of the subgroup is responding? We still need the data on HRD. We still need the data on P53. And I think more and more granularity will help us defining the populations where we would have benefit from the triplet, from the doublet of durvalumab and olaparib. And probably the same we have to do when we present the RUBY Part 2 trial. We have to do these things to go into more depth to see what subgroups are responding the most.
The original UK Medical Research Council strategy was to build the biggest trials, and then you could tease out all of the subsets. And unfortunately, you just have to prospectively evaluate those things in a homogeneous population who has those types. So more to come. Unfortunately, we are really coming to the end. We have to wrap up our discussion. So I just want to summarize two key take-homes. So for the deficient mismatch repair group, the microsatellite insightful high, there's a staggering benefit to immunotherapy. And the action item is every endometrial cancer should be checked for mismatch repair proteins, a simple immunohistochemical test. And then with the RUBY trial showing an overall survival advantage for all comers, maybe that just rounded out the year, a year when at SGO we heard about GY018 and RUBY, so exciting. And that Englefinger rule comes straight out in the New England Journal of Medicine. High acclaim. Thank you, Mansur.
Thank you very much for having me, and have a nice holiday.
Yeah, holidays. So you can find additional information and resources at the CME Outfitters Oncology Hub, a number of excellent resources for clinicians and patients. To receive CME CE credit for today's program, complete the post-test and evaluation, and you'll be able to download and print your certificate immediately upon completion. Remember, this is a second of a six-part podcast series on gynecologic cancers. Next month, I'll be joined by Dr. Nicoletta Colombo to discuss maintenance therapy in endometrial cancer, things like the Siena study. I hope you'll be able to join us. You can find additional podcasts in the series on the Oncology Hub at cmeoutfitters.com. Again, thank you, Mansur. Thank you for joining me for this very important discussion. And thank you to our audience for participating and for providing the best care for patients with endometrial cancer.
Thank you so much, Richard. It was a pleasure and splendid talk.
It's always very good to connect. Take care.